Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We're going to welcome in our first guest, and that is Jason Anderson from WHB, 810 AM in Kansas City. Jason, thanks for doing this, and I'm going to be on with you in a couple of hours, so we're just going to kind of, you know, share some love here between Kansas City and Buffalo today. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem, because about 4 o'clock Central Time, I think that love will be lost.
Yeah, you're right about that. There's no doubt. A lot of love between the two coaches. I want to start there. You have covered Andy Reid. You have seen Andy Reid up close, obviously, as a Super Bowl on his resume, a contract extension. Sean McDermott used to work for Andy Reid. He was fired by him. They actually still joke, I guess, in a way about that sometimes when he says, Andy told me it'd be the best thing to happen for my career at the time, and it kind of did turn out that way, let's be honest, because Sean McDermott now is in charge of what looks to be a pretty good football team in Buffalo, just got his own contract extension, and Andy Reid has really stayed the course, finally won that Super Bowl. I think the word consistency comes to mind when you talk about both these guys. Why is it, and what is it about Andy Reid that's allowed this franchise to really turn around and be so successful?
You know, consistency is right. I mean, it's just a professional way of approaching things. I think it's his personality, allowing people to be themselves, and to a degree, I mean, I think what he's shown is that, you know, so many different ways to coach, whether it's football or basketball. We hear the story that came out of Wichita with Greg Marshall in the college basketball side and the way that he was treating some of his players, allegedly. Like, so many people around the NFL, players, coaches, wanted Andy Reid to win a Super Bowl, and I think it's because of the way he treats people, and because of that, you have, in turn, people that want to win for him, people that want to go the extra mile for him, players that talk about how important it is for him to get the Super Bowl win, even though the players have spent their entire lives trying to get to that part, that pinnacle, to win the Super Bowl. They're talking about, man, I'm just excited and happy for what it would mean for Andy Reid, and I think the coaches out there feel the same way as well, because I think he goes out of his way to try to develop coaches as well. Like, we've seen the Bill Belichick tree that hasn't been successful. We've seen the Andy Reid tree that has been successful. And I think a part of it is the way he championed Doug Peterson, the way he's championing Eric Bieniemy along the way. And if Eric Bieniemy gets a job and is successful, I think part of that will be his training under Andy Reid, and Andy Reid essentially saying, okay, this is how we go about it, but now this is your game plan, or this is you calling the plays. And it's not a total control over everything. I think he allows coaches to do their job. And so I think the consistency that's there, I think the way he treats people, people want to work for him. And he's incredibly organized. Like, he's a brilliant, brilliant coach. So that's a big part of it. You got to know what the heck you're doing. You got to know how to coach. And I think he's evolved offensively over the years, whereas some coaches, Sal, have their offense, and this is my offense. And maybe 10 years later, they'll start running that offense, whereas everybody else may have evolved and gotten better. And I think Andy Reid's been along with the times throughout the years, and I think that certainly helped him to succeed.
Yeah, and Sean McDermott, I would say the same thing. He is incredibly organized. It's one of the things about him that we kind of talk about and joke about, but he knows that. He's very organized. He's attention to detail on all those kinds of things. So tonight is a game where both these teams are going to have to lick their wounds a little bit and get that organization back on track and get back to what they do best. Obviously, not the way the Chiefs wanted to play on Sunday last week against the Raiders, not the way the Bills wanted to on Tuesday against the Titans. But you just heard me talk about big picture. I think here in Buffalo, sure, I mean, this is a litmus test, but it is a big picture here. And people are wondering, are they to the level of a Kansas City Chiefs team yet? But what about in Kansas City? What did that game do, big picture, small picture, for the fan base and the reaction?
I think the big picture was, okay, you can lose. Like, you've won 13 games in a row, but it doesn't mean a team can come in and beat you, because there was no real stress around here about the Raiders. Chiefs had dominated the AFC West. They had dominated the Raiders. They were 28-2 I mean, in the last 30 games, Andy Reid at home. And so they were winners constantly against the AFC West. And so the last time the Chiefs weren't in first place was 2016. I think the end of the 2016 season was the last time they didn't start a week in first place in the AFC West. And so the Raiders come to town, and I don't know that the Chiefs took them lightly. I think there's a chance that that happened. And I certainly think us around here took the Raiders lightly. I think there was also maybe a little bit of, and it's crazy to think about a rivalry game and maybe being a trap game or a look ahead, mm-hmm. but I do think part of it with playing the New England Patriots, and the Chiefs are aware of how good Buffalo is. Like, the players know who the good teams around the league are, whether they want to say that or not. Every game is the biggest game because it's the next one on the schedule. Not true. They know the bigger games that are there, and I think the Chiefs knew that Buffalo was right around the corner. And at the time, you know, they knew that Buffalo was going to be moved, but all week you're leading up to Oakland or Las Vegas, and, you know, right around the corner is that Bills game, which is a huge one, which could come down to tiebreakers at the end of the season. I mean, we've talked about that around here. Baltimore, New England, and Buffalo, and Houston at the beginning of the season when we didn't know what Houston was. But those real four games, those last three, were huge for, you know, this year when there's only one bye in the NFL. Like, it's different this year, so you got to go and win those. So I think big picture, you find out you can lose the game. I think the sort of micro aspect is there are issues on this team. Mm-hmm. They got exposed in the secondary where Steve Spagnuolo has been able to hide that, been able to mask that. Their cornerbacks have been thin all season long, and they were in the offseason too. And he put them in bad positions. He said that. There was also some misreads. I give credit to John Gruden and the Raiders and their offensive scheme, because the way they executed and a couple of plays where they set the Chiefs up, Tyrann Mathieu and Daniel Sorensen, a couple of those guys got burned when they were just simply set up to use what they do best and then hit them over the top. And I think offensive line has been an issue, and I think that's shown against the Raiders and the pressure that Patrick Mahomes was under. And I think also Patrick Mahomes is not infallible, and he makes mistakes as well. And that's been something we've been watching this year, is a lot of times he gains depth in the pocket when he doesn't need to. A drop back that's supposed to be 9 yards and the tackles are blocking for 9 yards, but he fades and now he's 12 yards deep and those guys come right around the edge and now there's pressure where it shouldn't be. A clean pocket against the Patriots when they were only bringing three, he runs out of it for no reason and just gets out and in the you know, outside of the pocket. And it's what he does so well, Sal, is that he creates, he does these amazing things. And I think sometimes that can be a crutch for him, because he knows once he gets outside the pocket and it's just sort of backyard football, he might be the best in the game. And so those are parts, the micro aspect of what's going on. Macro, they won 13 games in a row. They're still, to me, the best team in the NFL. They can lose any week, and maybe it was a wake-up call for them.
Yeah, 22nd in the league completion percentage for Patrick Mahomes. You know, Josh Allen is not a high completion percentage guy. He's much better this year. Obviously, he's off to an outstanding start. And the way you describe getting out of the pocket, improvising, that's been kind of the Achilles heel of Josh. As good as he can be, he also makes mistakes doing that. But, you know, is Patrick the kind of guy, when you look at that 22nd completion percentage, 63.7, a little bit lower than what he's used to, is that a bit of concern? Or, is it, hey, that's just who he's going to be, because he also makes the wild plays to make up for it?
I think it's I don't know, a concern. I think it's not expected, right? I think it's something this year that you don't go into the season thinking that Patrick Mahomes is going to be in the 20s, right? The bottom half, bottom third of NFL quarterbacks in completion percentage, because the offense, because of Andy Reid, and because of how good he is. And I think some of that is trying to maybe improvise a little bit more when it isn't there. Last year, after he came off the injury and returned for that Tennessee game, he had missed the 2.5 games. And as the weeks went on, he was sort of doing the same thing. He was escaping the pocket. He was fading in the pocket, no reason. And we thought maybe he doesn't trust the knee, doesn't trust the ankle that got hurt week number one. And there's a little bit of that mental aspect of it. But he talked after the bye week that he had to trust the offensive line. He had to step up. His footwork, the fundamentals needed to be better. And he became a much better quarterback at the end of the season. He was stepping up in the pocket, the second and third read, while he was sort of Tom Brady in the pocket and less Lamar Jackson, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Sort of Tom Brady has to win in the pocket. He doesn't have a choice. And so there was a little bit of that in Patrick Mahomes saying, no, I'm staying in here and I'm trusting the offensive line. They're going to do what they're supposed to do. And now I'm hitting my third read. There was a lot more of that. And I think as the season went along, the offense got better. He became, you know, a more consistent quarterback. And I think there's some of that too. He talked about that after the New England game. and he talked about it after the Las Vegas Raiders game. So it's back-to-back weeks that he's talked specifically about the things he's doing in the pocket or not doing. So I feel like there's an understanding, right? The only way you fix something is acknowledging it. And I think he's aware of that. But honestly, Sal, I think it's something throughout his entire career he'll be battling. Like, you're not going to take the gunslinger, the
right.
I can make every throw out of Patrick
Mahomes. We say that about Josh Allen all the time here. We say that about Josh Allen all the time. I mean, you never took it out of Brett Favre, but you know what? I'm pretty sure Packers fans didn't care by the end of his career that you didn't take it out of Brett Favre. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And it's like that fine line, like how, and this is where Andy Reid and Mike Kafka, the quarterback's coach, and Eric Bieniemy, offensive coordinator, and through the last couple of years too, it's that fine line. Like, how do you get the best out of Mahomes, making sure he understands, okay, this was a pocket that was clean. You see, you escaped it for no reason, while also saying, no, be Patrick Mahomes. Like, we don't want to take away
right.
what you do, what makes you amazing. But that play that you make is one out of every 10 plays. The other nine, how do you win during those? What do you do during those? So where's that fine line? And I think Andy Reid understands that you can improve without taking away what Patrick Mahomes does. And so you live with some of those things. Like, you live with, like, honestly, like, there, we're talking about some flaws in Patrick Mahomes' game, and I think there are 31 other teams around the NFL that would love to be talking about Patrick Mahomes' flaws on their team,
yeah,
right? And
right.
so it's that grain of salt.
Good problems to have, right?
Also, absolutely. But it's the understanding that everybody can improve, right? Everybody
sure.
can get better no matter who you are. Brady improved over the years. Aaron Rodgers gets better over the years. So Patrick Mahomes certainly can improve as well. But it's those sort of little on the margin type issues with the Chiefs that if they can fix, then they can go back to being the best team in the NFL, which I think they are.
Jason Anderson on the West Hur Hotline here on the Extra Point Show. You can follow him on Twitter at J810Anderson. He is at 810HB, WHB in Kansas City. All right, let's talk on the field and what could happen tonight. Now, suddenly Mitchell Schwartz popped up on the injury report, but I looked. He actually has a streak of 133 straight games played. And I think outside of any punters, that's the longest of any position player in the NFL, so I wouldn't expect him not to play unless it was something severe. Is there concern there that he couldn't play?
I'm with you. I think it would be something severe for him to miss. He had his consecutive snaps streak broken last year as well. Of those games, he played every single snap, and so he missed three. So in the last however many hundred-plus games it's been, how many years, he's missed three snaps. And so I think it would have to be pretty serious for him to be able to do that. Plus, he played the entire practice. So
right.
he played the whole practice, but his listen is questionable. So I think it's more of a cautionary type deal.
Sure.
So I think he's going to play. But to me, the bigger picture even for him is I think it's another example of, look, this is an aging offensive line. That's something the Chiefs have to deal with. So if they're going to be a dynasty over the next couple of years, they're going to have to rework that offensive line because both tackles are getting old. And I think it's another another brick in the wall for him that he's 31 years old. And he's played a long time in the NFL at right tackle. He's been one of the best right tackles, but he's going to get older. He's going to age. He's paid well, and the Chiefs are going to have to figure out what they do after him and Eric Fisher at left tackle that have been pretty good tandems to protect Patrick Mahomes. So I think he's going to play because he's a guy that you just have to drag off the field, essentially.
We know a guy that's not playing. That is Sammy Watkins. We're very familiar with him in Buffalo, obviously, originally drafted here. Battled some injury issues, but when he played, he was really good. And I think the same could be said in Kansas City. I mean, you know, when he's played, he's been very good, but he hasn't been on the field all the time. How does that impact this offense? We know they have tons of weapons, but how important is he to that offense?
Well, Andy Reid made a great analogy last week before Sammy Watkins got injured. And he said, he's our low post player. And it's a great point because that's what it seemed with this offense. Like, you get in basketball and you're like, you know what, we need a bucket. Let's just throw it down to the post. He's going to make a bucket to get fouled, right? That's Sammy Watkins.
That's great.
Patrick Mahomes needs an outlet, needs to find somebody. Well, you know what? Over the middle for about 7, 8, 9 yards, there's Sammy Watkins. You know he's going to catch the ball. You know he can make plays after the ball. You know he's big and strong that he can pick up 3 or 4 extra yards. He's a really, really good blocker. That's one of the things Andy Reid has talked about. And Andy Reid's offense utilizes the wide receivers blocking downfield. I think that's an underappreciated aspect of not having Watkins on the field is you replace him with Mecole Hardman, who is a rail. He's not the strength and the sort of blocker that you're going to get from Sammy Watkins. And so missing that low post player, missing the blocker downfield, I think it's a bigger impact than some outside of Kansas City would make, because you still got Tyreek Hill, you still have Travis Kelce. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been okay, but at times he splashed that first-round draft pick status. And you know, they'll have Le'Veon Bell eventually, but I think it's a big loss for this offense, bigger than some people want to give it credit for, because he's been a real security blanket for Patrick Mahomes.
We talked about Mahomes and his ability to move, and people forget how good of an athlete he is. His dad was a Major League Baseball pitcher. You know, he can run. Mm-hmm. He can scoot. I'd still prefer that than him throwing the ball downfield, by the way, if you're a defense.
Right.
But he did have to move a little bit last week. We saw the Raiders kind of move that pocket for him, and that seems like maybe the way, I guess you'd say, to maybe frustrate this offense and get him on the move, flood the zones, not give him as many people to read. Is that really maybe what happened last week, and why they weren't able to be on their normal rhythm, I guess you'd say?
Well, we've talked about around here, like, what's the blueprint? Not necessarily to stop the offense, because even in that game, while they frustrate them, the Chiefs scored 32. Like, it's essential, like, how do you beat the Chiefs? We'll get to 31st.
Yeah.
So figure out a way to score 30, and then figure out some other things after that, because even when the Chiefs struggled, they got to 30. So what we've seen as far as a quote-unquote blueprint is, can you get pressure on Mahomes with only four? If you can't get pressure with only four, then I think you're in trouble.
Yep.
But if you can get pressure with just four and drop seven, what we've seen a number of teams do is they play zone and then they match it after 2 or 3 seconds or whatever. You know, they'll be sitting back in zone, putting pressure with four. The Patriots only brought three. And then they're matching those receivers and turning into man coverage. And so you've got Mahomes scrambling a little bit, reading zone when the play first starts, and then he gets out of the pocket and now it's man. So those are the things we've seen. But it starts with the front four in getting pressure, because the Ravens couldn't get there. And what, you know, Wink Martindale, what his personality is, I'm going to blitz. I'm coming after you. I'm going to blitz. Well, you don't blitz Patrick Mahomes. He's got a 120 rating in his career against the blitz. He's got 21 touchdowns and no interceptions when he's blitzed in his career. Like, he destroys blitzes. And so it's like, okay, what do you do if I can't put pressure with my front four? It's what San Francisco was able to do in the Super Bowl. And then the last three possessions, the Chiefs turned into the Chiefs. It's what the Los Angeles Chargers were able to do in week number two, when the Chiefs won in overtime and scored, what, 20, 23 points.
Mm-hmm.
It's what the Patriots were able to do. And for a good portion of the game, it's what the Raiders were able to do. And so, and again, that goes back to the offensive line for the Chiefs. It also goes back to Mahomes almost creating some of that pressure. So it starts with the front four. If you can do that, that is a good beginning. But you're also going to have guys that can play over the top with Tyreek Hill, that can guard the tight end with Travis Kelce, Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of the backfield. Andy Reid is a screen whisperer. He is one of the best
yes.
screen game coaches
yeah.
that has ever lived. And so you're always having to be worried and aware of that as well. So he's going to do a number of things, the eye candy that's going to be there, ghost motions to keep you on your toes as a defense. But getting pressure with four is the start to it. If you can't do that, then I would say good luck.
All right, I got two last ones for you. Let's stay in the offense, and I want to ask you a question about the defense. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire came out of the gate, looked really great week one. They obviously did pick up Le'Veon Bell. I don't think necessarily because they have to they're hurting in the run game, but it doesn't seem like it's going the way it should necessarily from the outside. What is the run game situation right now, and especially Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Maybe a little too much hype placed on him before the season even started.
I think certainly that. I think the hype that was there was getting a little crazy, especially people talking about number one pick in fantasy draft.
Right.
Like, okay,
right.
We get it. Like, he's, once Damian Williams opted out, like, he was the guy, right? And you knew he could, you know, catch the ball out of the backfield. You knew he was going to be a guy that at LSU they used him a lot, like Christian McCaffrey, with some option routes that were there. And so you thought, okay, what can Andy Reid do with this guy? Now you create somebody that's an extra weapon. Okay, now you got a linebacker on this guy or a safety. Okay, I'll take Clyde Edwards-Helaire at that. And so they've used him a number of times. He hasn't put up the numbers that people were hoping because the run game hasn't been as good as people were hoping it would be. But that's one of the things that the Chiefs struggled with all of last year. They struggled to run the football last mm-hmm. year as well. And so that's just continued into this year. And a little bit of that is the way Andy Reid approaches offensive linemen. He wants guards and centers that can pull. They're athletic. They're not road graders. They're not going to get in there and push you 3-4 yards down the field. They're going to get out and pull in a screen game. They're going to, you know, run different things that Andy Reid likes to do to get out on the edge. And so we've seen a little bit of flashes of how good Clyde Edwards-Helaire is. And we've seen him in the passing game as well. But, you know, the offense overall, which is crazy to say, like, it just isn't clicking the way you would hope it would. Le'Veon Bell, to me, signing is nothing at all of an indictment on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because the plan was that Damian Williams and Clyde Edwards-Helaire were going to be the running backs. And when Damian Williams opts out, it's Edwards-Helaire and then Darrell Williams, who's a guy they like, but he's just a guy. And so essentially what you're saying is Le'Veon Bell, is he better than Darrell Williams? Yes. Okay, you're better now. Now you're going to have two guys out there that no matter what play it is, you're going to have somebody that's going to be a dynamic receiver out of the backfield, whether it's Edwards-Helaire or Le'Veon Bell. But I do think the hype got a little crazy before the season just because they were thinking Edwards-Helaire is going to get the lion's share, and it's going to be what Damian Williams was in the Super Bowl, right? It's just going to be every game is going to be that, or it's going to be Kareem Hunt in 2017 when he had 1,800 total yards and like 12 touchdowns. Like, that's what Edwards-Helaire is going to be. And while there's a chance that that could still happen, I think the hype right out of the gate for a rookie that didn't have OTAs, that didn't have any minicamp, that didn't have preseason games was a little outlandish.
All right, and then finally on this, Jason, 10.8 yards per pass given up last week. Over the top, we saw it. Henry Ruggs mattered. Derek Carr did a nice job. You talked about the secondary a little bit earlier. Is that the blueprint, so to speak, to beat the Chiefs' defense?
Well, they had been good up until that Raiders game, and that's one of the things that we've credited Steve Spagnuolo with, is that Charvarius Ward and Rashad Breeland were their starting cornerbacks. Well, Breeland missed the first four games to a suspension. Charvarius Ward broke his hand, and L'Jarius Sneed, a fourth-round draft pick, was starting for this team. And they were able to find a way to get it done. And one of the more underrated players this year that I think hasn't got a lot of play is Rashad Fenton, who was a sixth-rounder a year ago. That's played really well this year for the Chiefs. But what happened against the Raiders was they used the Chiefs' instincts and eyes against them. So Tyrann Mathieu and Daniel Sorensen, safeties, what the Raiders have always done is they've thrown underneath. They've thrown underneath. And that's why John Gruden, after the game was over, was, hey, I bet those PFF guys are talking about us throwing deep. They're not doing that today. Because they don't do it. Because they don't go over the top. Now, they missed Henry Ruggs the previous three games, and having him helps. But what they did was on a couple of those big plays, they had somebody over the middle. Third and two was when Ruggs burned him for the 70-something yard touchdown. And they brought Waller over the middle. And what happened was Daniel Sorensen, that had deep middle, read third and two. They're going to Waller. I'm coming up to attack that. Well, gotcha. And so it was one-on-one with Charvarius Ward and Henry Ruggs. And as they say, if you're even, I'm leaving. And he just threw it as far as he could, and Ruggs went and got it. Same thing happened with Nelson Aguilar. That was Tyrann Mathieu did the same thing, came up and bit on the underneath route, thinking they're going to throw short. They went over the top. That's because they went against tendencies. Did Buffalo or did the Raiders that they throw short, and they said, no, we're going to get you. And they got him a number of times. So I think that's where that specific game stood out, and I'm not sure other teams maybe can take advantage as much of that just because the Raiders almost baited them into it. We know they come up and attack. They know we throw short. We think we can get them on these plays. And they did. And that's where the game planning, the execution, Chiefs got out-coached, out-played, out-physicaled, everything in that game. So we're, a little bit of a wake-up call. But I just think the Raiders specifically, their game plan had always been just to Derek Carr, a higher completion, passes, higher rate of completions, shorter passes, methodically move the ball, run the ball, and then they said, we got you. We're going to hit you over the top. So I'm not sure how bad the secondary is other than they got burned, they got out-coached, and out-executed in that game.
Well, we'll see if John Brown plays. That could be a very, very big key.
Absolutely.
In this game, I think,
100%.
After how the way that Tennessee was able to keep everything in front of them, but he changes the dynamic for the Bills' offense. Jason, thanks for doing this, and I'm going to talk to you in about an hour and a half. I'm going
to
be on your show
looking
in Kansas City,
it,
man. That's
going
to be awesome. You can then ask me all the questions about the Bills. It'll be cool.
That's right. Let's just play this back. I can take like a 20-minute break. That'd be awesome.
Let's do it, buddy. Hey, thanks for doing this today. Have a good show. I'll talk to you then.
Absolutely, man. Looking forward to it.
All right, Jason Anderson, 810 HB AM, WHB 810 AM in Kansas City.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.